2015 meeting of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. We are convened. Good morning to each of you. Welcome. We've got a rather ambitious agenda this morning, so we're going to have to plow right through it. Anyone who's asked to either testify on a public hearing on a bill or to provide us information in a work session, just a heads up, because we have so many items to cover, brevity is the order of the day. Thank you very much.
You better make it more plain than that. Don't talk very long or else.
Yeah, that's right.
And your bill might die.
And I'm giving Vice Chair Krieger the hammer. So with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3210. Mr. Gallagher, can you briefly remind us about this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3210 requires that the annual timber harvest on state forest lands in each subject forest district equal at a minimum the specified percentage of annual amount of harvestable timber expected to be grown on state forest lands in the district.
Thank you very much. Now, we had heard this bill in a public hearing last week. There are some amendments or possible amendments, my understanding is. And in order to update the committee on this, I'd like to provide an opportunity for that update. There is no fiscal, correct?
Correct.
No fiscal on this bill, so we can't move it today, but I do want the update. Do we have a list of folks on this bill?
I don't think we do have anyone on that.
Christina McNitt, if you'd come forward, and if there's anyone else that you have to assist us with an update, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Christina McNitt, representing the Oregon Forest Industries Council. Thanks for your time last week, where we walked through House Bill 3210, and I laid out maybe a proposed amendment representing a plan where the department would manage these lands 70% for management primary purposes and 30% for conservation primary purposes. Since that time, Commissioner Josie, who was also with me, has reached out to all 15 counties that are members of the Council of Forest Trustland Counties and have come to an agreement around a concept amendment. And I'll let Mr. Rydell talk about their proposal, which the Oregon Forest Industries Council would enthusiastically support.
Thank you, Christina. For the record, Gail Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties, but in this case, Executive Director of the Council of Forest Trustland Counties, which is a bylaws, a subcommittee of AOC. The Vice Chair Krieger knows we exist, having served on the Board of Forestry. Others may not know. We represent the 15 counties that transferred lands under the Forest Acquisition Act, excuse me, of 1941. That are now, we're all glad, state forests, including the Tillamook, Clatsop, Sun Pass, and the other state forests that you know so well. They were originally transferred on the understanding that they would be primarily production lands, with due regard to the water quality issues and recreation and other items. But the first order of business was to be production for the counties, and jobs for the folks where the who live near the forests. We are in the middle of a Board of Forestry process, looking at alternative forest management plans, and the board has begun to settle on a 70-30 roughly framework of production zoned approach that the previous governor, Dr. Kishaber, advised the board to pursue. We embrace it, but we have some concerns about how it would be managed. We're very fearful, having directly experienced what's happened on the Elliott State Forest. We were intervener defendants on that. There's some trust lands, county forest trust lands within the Elliott, but mostly we saw this as a trend that was going next to the Tillamook and next to the Clatsop. Tillamook State Forest has record runs of salmon, yet there's a national group that has filed a notice of intent to sue for the violation of the Endangered Species Act for these this particular run of salmon. So in any event, we have to spend money to defend it, even though we think it's not worthy. The consequence of doing the 70-30 zone approach wrong is that if you let the 30% in conservation grow to maturity and beyond, then it creates habitat, and habitat draws species that are having some trouble and are listed by federal law, and then you can't go in there. And over time, as we've seen in the Elliott, there's not much left except habitat. The State Land Board is in a very difficult position because that's trust lands from the federal government to maximize revenue for the state school fund, and they cannot do that under the current circumstances. So we don't want to be put in the same position. We need these revenues. So what the amendments, I'm sorry, you said brevity. What these amendments we suggest do is to reduce the 85% to 80%. That would put us in the range that's being discussed by the Board of Forestry. We don't want to do anything roguish, try to undermine what's happening in the Board of Forestry, but we want the proposal they're discussing to be managed right. We'd like to have it 80%. And then the second item we respectfully request is subsection 2. If you could have section 1, have that removed because it would create winners and losers. The 15 counties have had to go to court at least two times, won both times, having to do with their rights to particular operations of these lands. And so we stick together. This subsection 2 would create winners and losers among us, and that's not how we work. We watch out for each other. So we would respectfully request that that be removed.
So, Mr. Chair and members, excuse me, in summary, the amendments would reduce the percentage from 85 to 80%. The 70-30 management conservation zoned approach, as I testified last week, contemplates about a 77.5% harvest of the annual growth of that forest, which is 414 million board feet, and then striking subsection 2 of section 1. And we are at work getting those done and prepared for you for your consideration later this week.
Thank you. I particularly picked up that you intend for us to be able to work this later this week. So that suggests that hopefully there's some relative certainty, some amount anyways, that those amendments will be ready by Thursday.
Mr. Chair, we're doing our best, and I know Legislative Council is too. So Commissioner Josie just finished calling all of the 15 counties yesterday, so we will be reporting to Legislative Council immediately following this hearing.
One slight correction, Mr. Chair. We're governed by a board of seven members, and he contacts six other members. And I owe you an apology, Mr. Chair. You also served on the Board of Forestry.
That's quite all right. Committee members, I don't want to open this up for extensive questions. If there is anything that absolutely must be asked at this time, or if it can wait until we actually move the bill, I'd appreciate it. Thank you both very, very much. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3210 and open a work session on House Bill 3382. Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3382 extends the sunset provision from January 2nd, 2019 to July 1, 2019. For the law imposing a general prohibition on the growing of canola in the Willamette Valley Protected District.
Thank you very much. Committee members, any discussion about this bill at this point? Any questions about the bill?
Just
Representative Frederick.
Just a quick thing. I continue to want to find out what we find by way of the study. It is going to be important to the specialty seed folks, and not only in Oregon, but frankly, the industry overall, because we do such a good job in terms of specialty seeds in Oregon. We need to make sure that we're not threatening that particular industry. So that's part of what I'm looking for. And I am pleased that I'm hearing that we are planning on continuing to monitor the next few years so that we are not just letting things go.
Thank you very, very much, Representative Frederick. And thank you for underscoring the importance of that industry to many of the growers in the state, its importance to our state's economy, and its importance worldwide for Oregon agriculture. Any other items of discussion or questions before I recognize Representative Krieger? Vice Chair Krieger, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3382 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger moves House Bill 3382 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion? Seeing none, hearing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Moreno.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Yes.
Representative Woodsup.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Vice Chair
McClain.
Aye. Chair Whip. Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. I need a carrier for the bill. Anyone volunteer? Representative Esquivel?
Sure.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate that. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3382.
Spanish canola, is that one?
I don't know. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2687. Mr. Gallagher?
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2687 provides an exception to the offense of carrying a dog on the external part of a vehicle for those persons operating farm vehicles. There is a -3 amendment to the bill. Amendment expands the proposed exemption of persons operating registered farm vehicles to include persons engaged in commercial agriculture. There's a minimal expenditure impact, no revenue impact.
Thank you very much. Now, the -3 amendment was worked by you, Vice Chair Krieger, and you, Representative Barreto?
Yes. Yeah, I worked. Work with Representative Gomberg on that.
Okay.
Yep.
And anything of importance for the committee to know before we vote on this?
No, actually, he had already written up an amendment. We kind of threw that out and just kept a couple things. One, and primarily that any ag-related situation with the dog is fine.
Okay. And peace generally pervades across the landscape on this bill. Very good. With that, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair Krieger.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4/7/15.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger moves to adopt the -3 amendments dated April 7, 2015 to House Bill 2687. Is there any discussion on his motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, hearing none, it is adopted. Vice Chair Krieger again, please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2687 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Krieger moves House Bill 2687 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, hearing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Moreno.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Yes.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative Representative McEwen.
Aye.
Representative Woodson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Vice Chair McClain.
Aye.
Chair Whip.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, that motion prevails. Let's see, we're going to need a carrier on that bill. And
Gomberg.
I think Representative Gomberg, he's not here to defend himself. That's a logical move. Vice Chair Gomberg has volunteered to carry this bill. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2687. Thank you, committee members. Hold on while I catch up with the paperwork here. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3089. Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3089 makes legislative findings regarding mining and directs the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to conduct a study of mineral resource potential of all geographic areas except the Willamette Valley and report to the interim legislative committees. This bill was heard as part of a package of three bills regarding Dogami studies, and the bills were merged into this one bill, 3089. The study on mining and increasing local revenues and the study on consolidating the permit process for mining applications were not picked up in this new bill. So this is basically the 3089 is a comprehensive study of mining potential and mineral resources across Oregon. There is a dash two amendment, which basically incorporates those thoughts. There's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and we have a fiscal report and a revenue report on the bill.
Very good. With that, committee members, any discussion? You may remember multiple bills. It's now one. We have, I think, our former administrator, Beth Petrino, to thank for helping to get all those bills blended. I think it makes a lot more sense in this instance. Any questions on the Dash 2 amendments or the bill itself? I'm not seeing any. With that, I am going to recognize Vice Chair Krieger.
Do you need to do the Dash 2s?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 4/8/15.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger moves the Dash 2 amendments dated April 8th, 2015 into House Bill 3089. Is there any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, hearing none, is there any objection? Motion passes. Vice Chair Krieger again, please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3089 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger moves House Bill 3089 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Moreno. Aye. Representative Estrapel. Aye. Representative Frederick. Yes. Representative Gorsuch. Yes. Representative McEwen. Aye. Representative Woodson. Aye. Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye. Vice Chair McClain. Yes. Chair Whip. Aye.
Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes and the bill's on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you very much, committee members. Close the work session on House Bill 3089. It's a neat filing system right under there. It's plenty of room.
We have to skip over him for now. So let's go to the next page. We're waiting on the fiscal for that. But,
okay.
So we'll just go right. I would say we have a lot of people here to be able to go to a public hearing on House Bill 3141. That's the retail pet law. These are bills that we're going to be waiting for. People we're probably not going to get it today.
Okay.
I think we could go into a public hearing on House Bill 3141. I just have to get the sign up.
Okay.
Okay, very good. Just want to announce that folks who may be waiting on House Bill 2668, the paperwork's not in on that bill. We're going to have to jump over that for the time being. And with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3141. Mr. Gallagher, can you tell us a little bit about this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3141 expands the retail pet store law to include establishments or persons providing or offering to provide dogs by lease or rental. There is a proposed dash 3 amendment on this, and that dash 3 amendment specifies information that a retail pet store must provide in writing to potential dog rental customers, and clarifies that retail pet stores are ultimately the authority to determine the source and level of veterinary care for leased or rented dogs, and that the pet store retains ownership of leased or rented pets. It expands the definition of retail pet store to include establishments or persons that offer to provide dogs for lease or on a rental basis, or a person that assumes ownership of dogs from persons who retain possession while paying a fee for dog supplies and services.
Thank you very much. Rent a dog, you heard it here first. I'm particularly interested in the leaseback arrangements. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I had shared with some of us here on the rundown from Chuck Taylor and LC that had crafted this legislation. They said the bill would apply to hunting clubs, in some cases stud fees. So I thought that we were going to have an amendment to cut those out, but evidently that's not true. So if it's not true, then I can't support.
Okay. All right. Know that going forward. Everyone be forewarned.
See what people have to say.
Okay, I'm going to call up first, please, Sharon Harmon from the Oregon Humane Society. And if there's anyone that would like to accompany her, that would be fine. We have room for a total of three here at the witness stand. Good morning to each of you. Welcome. Please determine among yourselves the order of your testimonies.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Sharon Harmon. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Humane Society. And in the interest of clarity, the Oregon Humane Society is a separate standalone entity. We're a private charity. We're not affiliated with any other similar sounding organizations like my colleague from the Humane Society of the United States or my colleague directly left to me, Humane Oregon. We all sound alike, but make no mistake, the Oregon Humane Society is an independent organization. You know, we're intrigued by the notion of leasing. We're intrigued by the notion that people can have assurance that all their pets' needs will be cared for. I think it's what we all want. But in the interest of transparency and clarity, I think people need to know what they're getting into. I think they need to know where their pets are coming from. We already require that of retail establishments. The Oregon Humane Society works with over 70 agencies to accept pets from shelters that are facing the brunt of pet overpopulation and under-resourced agencies. Shelters in Hermiston and in Curry County, in Eugene, in Hillsboro, and Klamath Falls, across the state and really across the West. The Oregon Humane Society reaches out as a strategic initiative to help animals in other shelters. The landscape and the demographics of pet overpopulation are changing rapidly. There are far fewer animals coming into shelters, and I'll be the first to say hooray. As a charity, maybe we're about to close in on one of our core initiatives to see the end of pet overpopulation. We're not there yet, but I'm intrigued by the notion that people can acquire a pet and have all the needs provided for. That being said, I'm not sure that people understand where pets are coming from. I think they have a right to know if their pets are coming from a breeder, from a shelter, what their medical history is, and the lineage of those pets. We already require that of retail pet stores. It's required that shelters disclose all medical history of animals, and I would ask the same of for-profit entities. We've already received complaints from regarding two breeders that supply pets to a leasing company. I just think transparency is the name of the game, and we'd ask the same be applied to organizations that lease as well as sell dogs and other animals for adoption. We stand in support of House Bill 3141. I have not seen the Dash 3 amendments in my history, and the legislature tells me the devil's in the details. I'd like an opportunity to see those before passing any opinion on them. But we support the Dash 2. I think to Representative Escobar's point about pets that are dogs that are leased for short term and hunting clubs, I believe that addresses that. That's really not the point here of this bill. But as the Dash 1 and the original bill, the Oregon Humane Society stands in support of it, and we hope you'll join us in that issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director and Western Regional Director for the Humane Society of the United States. The HSUS is the nation's largest animal protection organization. We are headquartered in Washington, D.C., and as Sharon said, we work closely together, but we are a separate entity. To Representative Esquivel's point about the Dash 3 amendments, that does cover 24-hour leasing or renting arrangements that would cover situations like the use of dogs on private hunting facilities or the use of breeding dogs in dog breeding facilities, the purpose being, of course, to make sure that they are not swept up in the effect of the bill as an unintended consequence. What the bill does, it basically requires anyone who's offering dogs to the public to comply with the puppy mill law that this legislature passed in 2009. What the bill does not do is it does not put anyone out of business, and that certainly is not the intent of this organization. No one is wanting to see businesses be run out of town, but it does require that they play by the same rules as any other business that is offering dogs to the public, and that's what these pet leasing businesses do. They have storefront pet stores that are offering dogs to the public, and it's our position that they should be required to provide consumers with the same information as if they were engaging in traditional retail sale of dogs. So that means that they would provide a consumer with information about where their dog came from. It would include information about the dog's medical history. The Dash 3 amendments also addresses the leaseback arrangement where people take an existing pet that they own, transfer that dog to the leasing company in exchange for having the services and supplies provided for on a monthly basis. So that's essentially what the Dash 3 amendment does. So we stand in strong support of House Bill 3141 with the Dash 3 amendments, and we urge a do pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Good morning. Chair Witt and members of the committee, my name is Amy Sachs. I am here. I am the executive director of the Pixie Project. I'm here today representing Humane Oregon, and in the interest of brevity, because I do believe my colleagues have been very detailed in explaining this, I will just say that in my 10 years of animal rescue, I've only seen transparency in the source of the animal benefit both the animals and adopters, purchasers, or in this case, leasees. I feel that it's good to know the source. It helps with health, humane issues, all of the above. So it advocates for everyone.
Thank you very much. That was brief and to the point. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Sharon Harmon. Just in the interest of transparency, I want to make a point that we lose money on every adoption. The further we have to go, the greater our loss is, and adoptions has always been a mission initiative, not a profit initiative. We lose just over $300 per adoption every time we make a pet available for adoption. So we look forward to the end of pet overpopulation. We can refocus our efforts on what we were founded on, which is animal cruelty and humane education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Whitsitt.
So you mentioned there are three things that you're interested in, and that would be where the animal came from, its medical history, and its lineage. So when I go to the shelter and I go to get a dog, they usually don't know where they came from, their medical history, or their lineage. So I was wondering how are you going to ask the shelters to do the same thing? I mean, it's impossible to know the three things that you said when you pick up an animal from the shelter.
Representative Witt, Mr. Chairman, Representative Whitsitt, we're required to disclose the medical history as we know it. So whatever medical care we've provided, whatever medical care that we know has come with it, we're required to disclose that too. It's as we know. Dog breeds are a very subjective. How many times, the old joke is, how do you turn a pit bull into a boxer? You take him to a shelter. And we just can't tell what dog breeds are. But to the best of the knowledge, we're asking for good faith. What do you know, and will you be willing to share that with other entities?
Well, you make my point. You don't know. When you go to a shelter and you get a dog, you do not know what the history of that dog is. You do not know what the lineage of that dog is, and you do not know what the medical history is. So you go right to my point. You don't know when you go to a shelter those things, except the immediate, maybe the past day or week or whatever. So
actually, Representative Whitsitt, we're required to disclose all that we've provided to the animal, and what we know is what we disclose, and whatever we've done, we're required to disclose that.
My point is, it may only be a day's worth of history. If you pick the dog up and somebody comes in and wants to adopt it, it may be one day. You don't know the history of that animal, typically. Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, getting back to my points, Mr. Beckstead, why don't you, do they not allow, when they drop off a dog for stud, don't they stay more than a day?
Mm-hmm.
So this does not cover what I had discussed with you, and I thought you were going to get an amendment to carve those out, was my understanding. This does not, use a term, this doesn't feed the bulldog, folks. Hmm.
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, it was my intention with that language in the Dash 3 to cover the kind of situations that you were talking about, and in speaking with Mr. Taylor, that was the language that he had suggested, and it made sense to me. But I am certainly open to doing whatever needs to be done to cover the situations that you've referred to. If we need to make that longer than 24 hours, whatever it takes. Obviously, again, the point is not to have these kinds of arrangements be swept up with the effect of the bill. So whatever we need to do. I was thinking of like hunting situations where you go out for the day on a hunting facility and you hunt for the day using the facility's dogs.
I get that, but I mean, yeah. We also discussed that stud feeds.
Yeah, and I guess it never occurred to me that the dog may be left longer than 24 hours. So if we need to go longer, that's absolutely fine with me.
Yeah.
Okay, and that sounds like an amendment is probably in order. And
not like a friendly amendment.
And could be easily accommodated down in the sweatshop down the hall here, which I pity those poor folks right now. Mm-hmm. Representative McEwen.
Chair Witt, thank you. I just wanted to agree with Representative Esquivel's issue on stud dogs. If you have a female that you're breeding, sometimes they're there for two or three or four days. So I think we need to, a friendly amendment would be greatly appreciated to make sure that that doesn't become an issue.
Very good. Additional questions or comments? Folks, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony and your willingness to accommodate our concerns. Thank you. Let's see here. I'm going to call up, please, John Lee. It looks like Gloria Spears and Nancy Michaels, please.
Good
Good morning to each of you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Please, before you begin testimony, state your name for the record and proceed.
My name's John Lee. What else do you need from me on that?
That will work just fine, sir. Thank you. Please proceed.
I'm a pet owner, and I've dealt with the Humane Society because they brought up something here today. When I got my pet through them, I got no information. They said, well, we don't know. And the pet had serious problems and went from there. However, I am a member of HANA, which is one of these organizations that they were talking about. Now, I did not go through HANA to get my pet. I got my pet from a breeder. And I've had nothing in 3 years. I've had absolutely nothing but perfect care for her, training in every mode. They have given everything that they have offered and that they said they offered. And I talked to a lot of people. I've recommended this to other people. In fact, a friend of mine who did not get his dog through them but joined them, his dog ended up having to be put down because it developed a cancer on its spinal column that required it to be put down because of the pain. But I've seen people come in there with going through, they're required to go through classes before they're given a pet. So I'm sure I haven't gone through that procedure with them, but given the depth of detail they go through with new owners or prospective owners, I cannot imagine that they would not offer any information necessary. But I don't see a need for this bill to include this type of organization in this bill.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you for listening to us. I'm also a HANA member. In fact, since I couldn't bring my dogs, I brought pictures of my four HANA pets and things that we've gone through, including vet bills that could have been prevented if I had enrolled that particular dog in HANA at the time. So with the $622 I spent on this dog that was supposed to go to somebody else, I could have got 9 months worth of HANA care with pet food, flea and tick control, and everything else. I've enrolled my older dog in the program, and she's had a cast on her paw and with broken toes and x-rays and everything else. We get all our flea and tick control through HANA. Anytime we have a problem, we go to HANA and they fix it. I have had many dogs that I've had to put down because I have not had the money or the resources to take care of them properly. Most of them have been rescue dogs. And so I am a firm believer of the HANA program. Yes, I was told that our dog, Sasha, our first dog, came from a breeder. And she came as a puppy. But any time I've needed further information on how HANA took care of my dog, it was provided for me. And so my husband is a disabled Vietnam vet with PTSD. And if he doesn't have less than three dogs or something on his lap, he's not happy. And it calms him down. But I can go in and get toenails cut, anal glands done. HANA is a family. We're not an organization. We walk in, they all know us by name, and we know their name. We can call on them for help and everything else. And I, like John, have adopted through the Humane Society and other stuff. So, anyway.
Thank you. And could you tell us, give us your name, please?
Gloria Spears.
Gloria Spears. Okay. So, thank you very, very much. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Nancy Michaels. I have a HANA girl. I've had her for 2.5 years, and I really like HANA. I should have came more prepared for what I was supposed to talk about up here. But I really don't have much to say. I've had her for 2.5 years. I'm happy with Hannah is all I know. And I don't think I'd have my girl if I didn't have Hannah, because I have a second dog that doesn't is not on Hannah, and I have to take her to the vet. So I'm just very happy having Hannah for support to having taken care of my dog.
Very good. Yes.
One extra thing is that...
And would you, each time when we come back, see what happens is there's a record of everybody who's appeared, and many years down the road, we may not know who it is that responded or made an additional response. So each time you come back, if you could say, this is me again.
Sure. My name is Gloria Spears, and one thing I wanted to say about Hannah is that... my dog, Sasha, we had gone to puppy class every week for the first 6 months. Well, now she's 3.5 years old, and she needs more attention. She needed to have her manners and everything else. And I am so proud to say that she passed her Good Canine Citizen Award, and we're on to the next level. And I know John's done that with his dog. And so we have well-behaved dogs that Hannah provides, unlimited services, whether veterinary or anything. And so people don't get the concept that, well, yeah, maybe Hannah retains a leasing mode, but we have control over our dogs, what we say to our vet, what information we get. And I just can't say enough about Hannah. So thank you.
Thank you.
Could I add to my...
Yeah, yes, and
my name is John Lee.
Thank you.
Again, I was getting ready to do that.
But, great.
I did not think... I am also a disabled vet, and I've taken my dog, as Gloria mentioned, through training. And she has gone through several levels of AKC testing on the path to being a therapy dog, which is what I wonder for myself. I'm using her to help me at this point. And I have a husky. If anyone knows, they are a very hard dog to train and control. And Tana has helped me and helped her to pass all these tests that she can be a good member of society, and also that we know everybody. They know my dog. They know me. They know what my dog needs. And if I call up and say, my dog needs a flea check or something, I can go right in. They treat it. There's never been a time when they could not or would not help me. That's, I guess.
Very good. Committee members, questions or comments for this panel? Folks, it's obvious from your comments that you're very well satisfied with Hannah, and I think your testimony speaks very well for the level of care that they provide. Can you help me better understand specifically what objections or problems you may see with the bill or with the amendments?
Gloria Spears here again. I find that if Hannah gets lumped into this bill, we are not a retail store. We do get information. We do get veterinary care. If I went into, say, PetSmart, I would get a dog, but I wouldn't get the kennel that came with it. I wouldn't get the instructions on how to deal with a brand new puppy, like most new dog owners are. And I wouldn't have gotten the care. I can't go into PetSmart and say, okay, deliver my food once a week or once a month. I still have to go in and buy it. This is all inclusive in the Hannah Pet Society. And it's a new concept. And I've had so many animals that I've had to put down, have paid Buco bucks for, and Hannah is there right by my side. My one dog has been to the emergency care so many times with broken toes and holes in her side that had to be sewn up. That was no explanation as to why. On a weekend, on a holiday weekend, how can anyone afford that with four dogs and still have a life. Hannah provides that for me. It comes out of my grocery bill that I have set aside every month. The bill, you know, it's taken, so I don't have to worry about how I'm going to pay for it. And like John says, they know us. We go in, hey, Sasha, Penny, hugs. They know us. We know them. We are family. We are different. We are not a retail store. And at first, when we first got Sasha, I wasn't there to fill out the paperwork. And so when I did get the paperwork, I saw that, oh, okay, this is the big thing going on about leasing a dog. It said I owed $600. And I go home and I looked at it and I go, I started crying because we couldn't afford $600. Well, that is, if I move out of state, then I actually buy the contract out of $600, which is very feasible for everything that they've done for the dog for how many years. I get that. So I went back to the person who helped us enroll, and I said, I really don't understand what this says. And he sat there and he explained exactly. If my husband and I should die today or tomorrow, my kids cannot provide for my Hannah dogs. They would go to the pound or be put down because of age. Hannah takes our dogs back because they are our co-parents. And they would rehome the dogs appropriately. They would give that person that information. I have fostered Hannah dogs for up to 6 months until they got their forever home. So I include the training that I was given to help them go into another home for transition. That is what's different.
So I'm trying to understand here. I noticed on the witness sheet you've identified yourself as from the Hannah Corporation. So do you come to us with a concern that this bill would put Hannah out of business?
Or? It would. Hannah keeps our costs at a low level so we can all afford to have good care for pets. And I'm afraid, you know, I totally don't understand all this bill because I've never done this before. But I really think that if you lump Hannah into this bill, it's going to cause Hannah to have to raise rates so people can afford it. And the quality of care, you know, they might drop out or something else because, okay, we're back to square one, like we're going to PetSmart, we're going to Banfield, etc., and we're paying 20% of a $5,000 bill one time. I'm still paying on three dead animals that I haven't had for 3 years because of the bill or because of the old ways of dealing with pet stores and humane societies. So, anyway, I don't know if that's any more helpful, but that's, you know, what I understand.
All right, fine. Anything further? Representative McEwen?
Thank you, Chair Witt, and thank you for being here today. This
thank
is such an
us.
Interesting topic. I think it's new to all of us.
Very new.
And I have some questions I'm not sure you can answer. I'm hoping so. How extensive is the work that Hannah does? Where is Hannah located in the state of Oregon? Are there multiple sites?
Yes. Gloria Spears again. They have they started out in Vancouver. With their office, and then they started expanding, and so for us that lived in Oregon, they had set up a training center off Sunnyside Road until they bought the new facility, which is our HE1 Center, Health and Education Center, that's at Mall 205 Place. So it's centrally located to the freeway. That's where we go and have training classes, and there's a beautiful video that tells it. It's where we go to have dental surgery or whatever that's done. They also have started a new facility over by Washington Square.
Okay.
To help deal with the West Side people. They also have St. Francis in Vancouver, which is our emergency care hospital. So when we call up, we say, hey, this is what's going on. Okay, they call St. Francis. We walk in the door. Our animals are cared for. We walk out, no extra cost other than our monthly stipend for our food and everything that's involved.
Follow-up, sir.
Please.
So are there other organizations like HANA operating in Oregon?
I have never found one.
Okay. And I'm looking at the effect of the amendment, and one of the things it says that it does is clarify that a retail pet store, HANA would fall under the definition of, I believe, if this passes, is ultimate authority to determine the source and level of veterinary care for the leased or rented dog.
Right.
So is that part of the conversation we're having here today, is who has the ultimate authority on medical care of the pet ultimately if something does go awry?
Like I said, Gloria Spears again, when my one dog has had multiple issues, HANA is my backup plan. And, you know, I take the dog in. I know the doctors by name, and they know me. And we stand in the room, and we discuss the ultimate care, what is the next projection, how the x-rays looked on the dog when she broke her toes, what the care was going to take. You know, and this has happened with all my dogs. So that's why it's the most unique, awesome program I've ever been in. And I have not found any other.
But I'm not sure that answers my question.
We have control of our care.
Okay. So if you got to a situation, and we've had a lot of dogs, and end-of-life care for dogs right. is very personal and very difficult.
Exactly.
If there was a situation where the dog, the way I'm reading this, the ultimate authority lies with the veterinary care from the lease agency, which would be HANA. So if the owner came in and there was a discrepancy in maybe the time if there was a discrepancy about the pain and suffering of the dog, and it was someone determined that maybe end of life was imminent and,
right.
and the owner did not, is that part of this conversation as to who ultimately has authority for the care of that dog?
Okay, this is my, Gloria Spears again, this is my philosophy on this, is that we have all bonded so well with our providers, all our veterinarians, that they know us personally and how we have treated our dogs and kept them apprised, that we all come to the same conclusion at the same time. Some of us would hang on longer because we're not ready to let go because they haven't had death of an animal before, and it is very hard and personal. But HANA would work with us. They have grief counselors there to help us with the transition. They have other many services, like a behavioral specialist on staff. So if our dog does something quirky that we can't fix, okay, here is how we do this. So that's why we are different, and we work together.
Thank you. Folks, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony, and you were excellent witnesses.
Thank you. We've got a whole bunch of us back there.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Having difficulty with some of the handwriting here, we have Ms. Goodwin with HANA, we have Judith with HANA, and we have Scott Campbell. Would you come forward, please?
Okay. Representative Witt, I know you guys are in a hurry.
Yes.
Maybe I could give an overview of HANA for you, and we've got a lot of great pet parents here that would like to testify, but you know, if I could kind of go through what we're doing as HANA, that might answer a lot of your questions.
All right. Please.
Okay. My name's Scott Campbell, for the record, and I'm the founder of HANA's, and there's a lot of people, you know, working on this project now. We've created about 120 new jobs in Oregon, and but most importantly, we've helped improve the lives of I don't know how many, you know, over 7,000 families in Oregon, because they now have a pet or two or three or four that they wouldn't have been able to have before. And my background was I started Banfield Pet Hospitals and grew those, and then sold that business, and a bunch of us you know, really wanted to give back to the pet industry. After we sold our business to Mars, and so, you know, we actually were drinking some good old Oregon Pinot Noir one night, and talking about you know, what the problems were that really still needed to be solved, you know, in the pet industry, you know, in not just Oregon but, you know, across the United States. And you know, so we were looking at problems with pets, and one of the big problems is, you know, we know that having a pet helps us live longer and helps, you know, improve our lives. Our blood pressure is lower, our kids are more likely to finish school, but about half of Americans don't have pets. There's still many, you know, Sharon can tell us exactly how many in Oregon, I'm sure, but there's still many pets put to sleep in Oregon for want of a home. And especially a lot of cats, and we also do, besides dogs, we adopt cats and rabbits and guinea pigs. There's many, we found in a bunch of research of pet owners that there's a lot of pet owners that are unlikely to get a pet, you know, after this one passes on, because it was so painful, they didn't have the money, they went through, you know, a lot of really tough decisions, you know, a lot of times, and that's painful. And so despite the great attributes of having a pet, of longer life and a better life and all that, they're unlikely to get a 40% are unlikely to get another pet when this one passes away. Another big problem, it's not talked about much, but a huge percentage of the pets that are adopted out at shelters, we go into a shelter and we feel sorry for those pets, you know, and a huge percentage of those pets end up back in the shelter because they're not matched properly. So we created a matching program, kind of like eHarmony, and we go out and test the pets, and then we test the people, and, you know, put them together with the pet. We only have about a 3% failure rate, where across the nation, you know, it ranges from 40% to 60% end up back in shelters, which is a huge waste of resources. And then another big issue is pets aren't getting all the care they need to maximize their lives. You know, many, many, many pet owners don't get, because they can't afford it, all the care that pet needs in order for that pet to live as long as it could, and at the quality that it could. There's also a huge cost in adoption, even though Oregon Humane may be losing, you know, $300 per adoption. It still costs the consumer a lot of money to go to Oregon Humane and get a pet. And then, you know, if that pet, you know, was around another pet, you know, in the shelter that had parvo or whatever, it comes home and it has parvo, there's another huge cost. You don't know what kind of a behavior problem that it has, which is the reason that it's been in the shelter 3 times, you know, and there's nobody to help you with that. Or if you can find someone, it costs a lot of money. So what we wanted to do is try to create a new model that would really address, you know, all of these opportunities or problems, and so that we could have, you know, truly long-term, people would have truly long-term relationships with their pets. And so part of the problem were, you know, a lot of the laws around insurance, frankly. Insurance is really, really tough to afford for pet owners because of the cost and a lot of the regulation around it. And then there are, you know, if you look at it, you know, creatively, there are ways to help the tax code actually, you know, help you with a business like this. You know, if it's a business and you can actually deduct the price of the pet, you know, that can go to help support the and lower the cost for the pet owners. So anyway, we created a new model, and how it works is somebody that wants to have a pet that doesn't have one can go into one of our placement centers or talk to us online, and we ask them our whole raft of questions to try to figure out what kind of pet is going to work best for them. And then we match them with a pet. And we give them three choices. And if those they don't like any of those three, we give them three more choices. And once they're a member, they can do that as many times as they want. And then we place that pet, and we you know, some people have had 17 puppies, you know, and they don't need a lot of help, you know, on how to raise a puppy. But some people, it's their first puppy, or it's their first kitten, or whatever, and they take a different program and a different amount of education. Because we're trying to give them the education they need. If at any time that pet doesn't work out for them, we take it back and find it a new home. And we don't have to worry about ownership issues or anything. I don't think, you know, and you will get everybody else up here, but I don't think you're going to find anybody that looks at this as a lease, you know. They're the pet parent. It's like your kids, you know. Do you really own your kids? Or do you want to, you know? You know, it's not like that. You know, what we're doing is we figured out how to structure this financially in a way that we can lower the cost of the pet owner and make it a predictable amount of money that they have to pay to support that pet for its entire life. And what...
Mr. Campbell... Yeah. I'm going to have to ask you to close because we've got we've got several bills behind you.
I'm sorry, Doc.
And if there's anything else that you want to address that goes specifically to the bill, I would welcome that.
Okay. Well, what this bill actually does is is make Hannah's, which is the only company that this bill applies to in the state, it makes us a pet store. We're not a pet store. We don't have pets there, even. We get all our pets from about 80 different nonprofits in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. As a pet, if it makes us a pet store, it will put us out of business because it will by definition, will be a pet store, and there are 600 laws in Oregon that we will fall under. In addition to that, by you know, the pet parents don't have any risk. We're nothing like a pet store or even a shelter where somebody comes to the shelter, they pay money for their pet, and then they leave and they have to take care of it. That's not how it works. You know, they come to us, we adopt it, they pay a monthly fee from then on, and we take care of it. It's our risk, not the consumer's risk. So you know, it's a completely different deal, and the bottom line is most of the pets that we get are from the pet owners themselves. You know, they bring their pet in, basically sell it to us, and then we take care of it forever. The other ones, you know, we get from these all from nonprofits, you know, in the three-state area, and those, frankly, you know, tell us that if, you know, they will adopt pets to us, but not if we tell Oregon Humane Society where we get them from, because they're worried about repercussions from Oregon Humane.
All right. Representative McEwen.
I just have just to clarify for me, I'm trying to understand the structure of your business. Do you contract with a veterinarian to open an office? How does your relationship with the veterinary services that you provide work?
I'm a veterinarian, and we'll know back, the president of the company is a veterinarian. He was in charge of all the hospitals at Banfield, coast to coast. And we hire our own veterinarians, and we take care of all the care. And we hire our own behaviorists, and we do all the behavior care.
This is in your own facility. You have veterinary services provided.
Unless it's something that we can't do. And then we have contracts with different specialty hospitals and different emergency hospitals. And certainly if one of our pet parents is on vacation and they're, you know, out of town, then, you know, we'd use the local Humane Society wherever they are. I mean, the local emergency hospital wherever they are.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
Representative Whitson.
It seems to me like it would be in the best interest of your corporation to provide the best and healthiest pet because otherwise it's going to cost a lot of money from your veterinarians and the people you have to pay to take care of them. It just seems intuitive to me that you're going to provide a superior animal because otherwise it affects the bottom line of the corporation.
Well, and you know what we want is we want pets that are healthy, going to stay healthy, going to live a long time. You know, that's what we want. We actually, the average pet in the United States is seen 2.5 times a year. Our average pet is seen 4.5 times a year in our hospitals because our pet parents take better care of them. And there's no barrier to coming in. And you know, certainly if somebody leaves, it's right in our policy that they get copies of their medical records and all that if they have to move to a different part of the country. So there's no need for this bill.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi, I'm Judith Backman, and I'm a pet owner through Hannah. I'm very pleased with the way my cats are taken care of, and to think of Hannah as a pet store is like thinking of a doctor's office as a hospital. I mean, it's just you get so much superior care for your pets. You understand that they are legally owned by Hannah, but I don't know how to describe exactly that you love your pet. They're your pet. They're not going to be taken away from you or anything like that, but they get the best possible veterinary care and the humane care for the person, too. I mean, if you have a problem, you're frustrated over something, you just call them and they talk to you about it. You can have a behaviorist work with you. If you lose your pet, they have bereavement counseling. There isn't anything that they won't do for that pet. It's not a pet store. It's a refuge for people who have pets and love their pets and want them to have the best possible care for a lifetime. And it's affordable. And if they become under this law as a pet store, that's going to go out the window. People won't be able to afford it.
Thank you very much. Any additional questions or comments?
Thank you.
Mr. Campbell, I have to be very candid with you. I have heard nothing but positive comments about the company that you founded and operate, and the care that you provide for animals that are part of your operation. And so far, the witnesses, I'm sold. I'm sold on what you do. But I have a total disconnect between people coming in here and telling me how good your care is, and yet I'm interested in House Bill 3141 and its amendments, and I haven't heard very much, if anything, about it. So I'm in a quandary here, sir, and I don't know how to deal with this. The record would accept any additional information that you or others would care to offer us. So
we'll give you the specifics today.
Okay. Fine. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Kay Watson and Janet Walsh. And if you can complete your testimony in 2 minutes, Mr. Gallagher, if you could provide us a timer on that, I'd appreciate it. We're going to have to move along on this bill. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Kay Watson.
Go ahead.
I was not provided with a copy of the bill, so I can't speak to the specifics you are asking about. I can only speak to the specifics of my experience with the Hanna Corporation, which, again, like you said, is glowing. I was provided information as to where my dogs came from, and I have been provided with all the care that supports those dogs. And I've actually used my dogs at school. I teach. And they have passed all their tests. And we have gone to 2 years of classes, more so than I have at school. And they work with children. And one of my children that I was working with is autistic. He's also a type 1 diabetic, and they have gone to Hanna to get a dog to use to sniff for insulin. So, I do apologize for the fact that I have not read the bill, but that is my experience with Hanna.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Janet Walsh. My daughter got her first dog through Hanna, and the care that it had drew me to bring my last generation, my three dogs, to Hanna for the care that that they received. And plus, I have one that I purchased through Hanna. I have put down three dogs because of age, health issues, and it was all my choice. It was very nice, a very wonderful experience. I've had nothing but great care. I did not read the bill either, so I'm not really sure what to say in support of that, but nothing but good to say about them.
Thank you. All right, fine. Thank you both very, very much. I'd like to call up, please, Amira Streeter, Lisa Felt. Excuse me. Amira, if you'd stand down, get folks all in the same position here. Lisa Felt, Bernadine Lee, and Paul Drews. Good morning.
Good morning.
If you could limit your statement to 2 minutes, please get started.
Bernadine Lee. I am a Hanna pet owner. Did not get my Siberian Husky from Hanna. Knew a breeder. Met the breeder ahead of time at the house. Picked out the dog and picked it from there and searched out, heard about Hanna, inquired about it, compared it to just getting pet insurance or whatever. They seem to offer lots of services besides the food delivery and everything else for us. My concern with the House bill is adding lease and rental of an animal is lumping Hanna as a retail pet store, because they do so much more than what a retail pet store does, at least for the pet stores I've been in. And I'm concerned about the ramifications if Hanna is put in as a retail pet store as to how that's going to affect not so much the services they provide, but the cost of the services. And the bottom line is, how much am I going to have to fork out more, even for just one, let alone people that have more than one animal through them and stuff. Animal services with a vet before we joined Hanna and stuff were quite expensive. This is affordable. And so that's my concern.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Paul Drews. I'm a resident in Gresham. And I want to thank you folks for your interest here. Mr. Chairman, it seems that there was a question in regards to the source of the animals. And a medical history was a question. I'm a proponent, so I'll be redundant. I'll try not to be redundant. I am a proponent for the Hanna Society, and we received our dog about 3 years ago. It had medical problems when they were able to find the dog, a match for us. But when it came to us, it was healthy. Here again, it would not be good business practice to proceed with and process and give to a potential owner a sick dog. Anyway, we just wanted to just say that we, again, proponents, we are happy with the care that we've got. We have used the emergency portion. We've, on a Sunday, we had a dog that had a back out of joint. They took care of it right away. These are very helpful to seniors such as myself, my wife, and we appreciate the total care and the care that they show for our animals. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Lisa Fowler, and I'm also a HANA member. Been a HANA member for about 5 years. I have an 8-year-old bulldog that I got through a breeder when she was 11 weeks old. My son one day came home from the mall and said, "Mom, you got to check this place out called HANA." And I wasn't real sure what they were all about. They're fairly new. But I went and talked to somebody at HANA, and they were able to tell me about their plan and how it works and how I could bring my already established dog in to be able to get on their TLC program, which has benefited me greatly because not long after signing up, she kept getting chronic ear infection, which led to a very expensive surgery that I know that if I had not been a HANA member, I would not have been able to afford that care for my dog. And at the time, she was 4 years old. She's 8 now, but she still has many years to go. HANA has been great. October, we adopted a pug through HANA. The pug had been rehomed twice before we had taken him in. We were told all the circumstances of his background, any sort of medical problems, behavioral problems. That's also a nice thing with HANA is they provide training and behavioral training, and you can do one-on-ones with the veterinarians there if you are having such issues. I find that if you go into a retail store and you pick up a puppy and you spend $800 on this dog, you're walking home just like taking a baby home. You don't have instructions. HANA is the instructions. They help you with being able to raise these pets to be in society, which I think is becoming a bigger issue. More and more people are wanting their dogs to go to the restaurants with them and out in public. So you want your dogs to behave well. And I think HANA does that. I find that this bill, if it goes into play, is going to raise those rates, as he said, to the members and to future members. And maybe it won't be obtainable for some people. And we don't want to see homeless pets. We want people to get pets and pets be with them for life and until their end of life or your end of life. And then even after your end of life, they may be our family member that'll go to somebody else. HANA's there. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. And could we get your name one more time, please?
Felt.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you all very, very much. Appreciate your testimony. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Elaine Drews.
All by myself?
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Elaine Drews, and I have not a lot more to add. My husband just did speak. I am not really familiar with this particular bill that you are asking about, but I do believe that we shouldn't have any more regulation, especially for HANA. We are so appreciative of what they've done. We've had pets without medical care, and now that we have HANA, we have a pet that has wonderful medical care. We tell everybody that we know about the company because we believe in it. To begin with, I thought this was the craziest thing I'd ever heard of. We came from Douglas County where HANA was not, but you would get a pet from wherever and took care of the medications or any problems or whatever, however you could. And I think that lumping HANA into a bill that is going to cause hardships on not only seniors like us, but on young families that want to have pets but cannot afford some of the care for a good pet owner, I think is a travesty. And I think that I would ask you to really consider about what you put into this bill and who it will affect. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony today. And last on our list is Amira Streeter. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to our committee.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Amira Streeter, and this is my dog, Lula. She is a Hanna pet. I am a Hanna customer, and I just want to give a different perspective on why I support the bill that is before you, 3141. I will be very brief for time, but basically what I want to say, besides the fantastic care and services that you've heard about, the issue with me is that my dog Lula is a one-year-old now. I got her straight from Hanna. She is supposedly a purebred Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. And because of their matching program, I knew that she was the dog for me in terms of temperament and what I needed, apartment living and what have you. But for me, this bill allows for transparency, which I think is very, very important to any organization, regardless of what the business is and what have you. When you're talking about animals, you're talking about a little piece of you. It is more than a car or a cell phone, but Hanna the Pet Society treats dogs in that way. I am not the owner of Lula, but I am her pet parent, and she is my angel, and I need her in my life. But I constantly wonder where she came from, who her parents were. How do I know that 5 years from now she's not going to have a heart failure due to heart conditions that are very common in Cavaliers? I think about 50% are affected by them, and the only way you can know is through lineage. And I don't know if she came from a puppy mill or a breeder or what have you. They haven't given me any information, and I've also submitted written testimony about this, so you can delve into that a little bit deeper about what they have mentioned to me. But I would hate to think that I was supporting puppy mills as an avid animal lover, and I would hate to think that Lula's mother might be in some crate somewhere suffering and producing more puppies for the benefit of a corporation. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you. And lastly, I'd like to call up, please, Denise Hampton. And is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify today on House Bill 3141? This is the last call. Thank you. Good morning and welcome to our committee.
Good morning. My name is Denise Hampton, and I'm an animal welfare advocate. In my spare time, I work in business during the day in advertising. I'm here to testify in support of this bill, and I'm fine with the amended third version involving rental of dogs for 24, 48, 72 hours, whatever's needed. I just want to say that this bill is not about making pet leasing illegal. There's no regulation that I know of regulating this sort of business. This is about vet care and records access, sourcing of the pet, and from breeders specifically. This pet leasing is not happening just with pets from shelters. There are no 6, 8, 12-week-old, you know, King Charles Cavalier puppies in the shelters. And today I'm here. I've already submitted written testimony, and I've also submitted the text of a lawsuit filed late last year. But I'm here to actually share with you some stories from emails that people have sent me. Peter sent us, "My wife and I had an insurance plan for our 2 rescued greyhounds. We failed to do our homework. 1 month into the service, we heard the company owned our dogs. We elected to cancel our service immediately. They told us we had to buy back our dogs, and the cost was $4,000. Another one, let's see, and I'll be brief in case you need me to cut off, but Lynn sent us this email. "We fell in love with an 8-month-old puppy. We were told that she came from a shelter in Orange County, California, told once by one person. No one ever told the same story twice. When we picked her up, she had a bladder infection and fleas, though she was supposedly groomed. It was revealed for the first time at pickup that the dog had been returned 2 times for excessive barking. She has never barked, but exhibited anxiety, fear of people, wolfed down her food so fast that she vomited, and was not house-trained at all. She seemed like a puppy mill dog, or at least one that had been held in terrible conditions. I tried to get help from the company for some of the issues. I never saw a vet, just vet techs who made excuses for the vet not being available. They did not know any more than I did. I finally took her to my own vet and was told that the dates for the vaccines could not possibly be right, or her age is not right. My vet has formally requested information. I plan to buy out the contract and be done with it. Another one, Tiffany. I got a puppy from a leasing company in April 2014. I had the puppy for 2 days and realized that she was deaf. I called the company and they had no clue she was deaf, so they wanted me to bring her in. They told me to go to their training classes. The trainer told me she had no experience training deaf dogs. We had to research on our own and seek out help from a local pet supply store and Deaf Dogs of Oregon. I called the company and wanted out of the contract, which states that I had to pay $700 to terminate the contract, and that is what I was told when I signed the contract. Now they're telling me that I have to pay for the 24 month contract plus the $700, which is coming out to be $41.56. This dog is half Bichon Terrier and half French Bulldog. A purebred French Bulldog would cost $2,200 for a healthy puppy with a health guarantee. And I have another story, but I know that you want me to be brief. So I also wanted to share that I work in advertising, and I pulled the spending report in Oregon, in Portland specifically. Last year alone, over $630,000 was spent in advertising for pet leasing. And that speaks volumes. In those commercials, and I double-checked it yesterday, the most recent television ad mentions your pet numerous times, while your pet isn't really yours. I think that this legislation is very important, and I'm open to questions if you want to ask me any.
Thank you very much. Committee members, I really need to move unless there's something exceedingly pressing. Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate it. Going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3141. And I'm going to just briefly open a I am going to make an announcement. Everybody in this committee gets equal treatment. Everybody that comes before this committee gets equal treatment. I have a bill, 2536, that deals with attestation and the purchase of hunting fishing tags and licenses. That's my own bill exclusively. I declare it dead as of this point in time. We all get equal treatment. With that, I'm going to open.
That opens the door.
With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3459. Mr. Gallagher, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3459 increases the frequency of days for which Fish and Wildlife Commission may authorize persons to angle for fish or take shellfish without licenses or tags.
Thank you very much. Do we have a sign-up sheet for this one?
I think we have Mr. Brownscombe is here to fill us in on where they are.
Okay. Mr. Brownscombe?
Yeah. Just 2 or 3 minutes to fill us in.
Okay, very good. As he's approaching here, committee members, just want you to know this bill is not ready to be moved forward at this point. Again, this is probably more in terms of telling us about amendments that we can anticipate. And I don't, Brett, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but please proceed.
Sure. Chair Witt and members of the committee, for the record, Brett Brownscombe, Interim Acting Deputy Director with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I wanted to just share at your request, provide an update on conversations with Representative Helm. After the hearing on this bill, we did talk. We need to check in again, but what we talked about at that time was an amendment that would reduce extend the number of days for which the commission may authorize free fishing. To something like six, I think it's at two now, with the intent of trying to pair those days with other agencies to incent the experience, the outdoor experience of angling. So that was the one conversation we had on this. The other components of the bill relate to establishing a task force, as well as establishing a new fund subaccount on those pieces, there are a number of conversations ongoing related to a larger task force related to future funding and the vision and activities tied to the Department of Fish and Wildlife's work. There are also other pieces of legislation related to outdoor education and promotion of outdoor activities. And so with Representative Helm, we've talked about the possibility of moving those pieces of the bill into those broader conversations and focusing the bill on giving the commission more authority to advance free fishing day opportunities to promote angling recruitment.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. It's more of an announcement, committee members, than anything else. Representative Esquivel?
Quick question. Brett, why would it cost anything on this? You were talking about what it's going to cost. Why would it cost anything?
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, I'm not sure I did mention it was going to cost anything.
Maybe
I misunderstood.
On this. I thought you mentioned cost.
No, it would be if there was a new subaccount created and a task force created pursuant to the bill, there would be agency costs in staffing the task force and setting up and administering a new account, but likely minimal. The conversation, though, has been to move those pieces of the bill into the larger conversations and narrow the bill just to focusing on authorization to the commission that it may provide, you know, up to 6 free fishing days. That the costs related to that would be, if the commission were to take that action, potentially it reduces the number of people buying licenses because instead they're taking advantage of free fishing days, potentially. On the other hand, it may recruit people. If it's designed well, it may recruit new people into angling, which could broaden the department's customer base. So that's the only issue that we see related to costs.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. Appreciate that update, Brett. Thank you. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3459. And I'm going to announce that anyone who's here for House Bill 2537, we're going to have to carry that over. There are -6 amendments coming, and we do not have fiscal or revenue statements at this point. With that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2984. Mr. Gallagher, can you remind us about this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2984 requires Clackamas County to develop a pilot program for forestry products grown on non-forest land in the county to be commercially produced and marketed through a forestry product cooperative. There is a -3 amendment. And the bill is to be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. We have a fiscal report and a minimal impact revenue on that -3 amendment.
Thank you very much. Representative Parrish, I'd ask for an amendment from you to bring peace to everyone on this bill. Tell us where we're at.
So, Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37, Westland and Tualatin. So 2984 is not the peace meeting bill. It's actually 2985. 2984 with the -3, as it's written, with the -3, if you recall, covers language from the State Department of Forestry and the Department of Justice, gets it all in line with everything that they need to make us a legal operating entity as a co-op to do forest products. So 2984, as written with the -3s, is not where the snag is. That bill is specifically the request to the counties with the ask for, well, with the appropriation of some funds from us to go back to Clackamas County and create a turnkey project, a program that can be utilized in other counties. So that's what 2984 is. My request was that we move that -3 amendment today and work it and send it down to Ways and Means and then get to the 2985, which is the bill that has caused the League of Oregon Cities some heartburn, and we have a fix for that as well.
Okay.
At least the temporary.
Hold on just a second, folks.
-2 is here, but she's talking about the -3s to this one.
To 2985.
Well, hold on. Let me pull up on my notes here.
Yeah.
Should be the 2984 with the dash twos, I think.
Dash two amendment.
All right. Yeah, dash twos. Sorry. Okay. Dash threes are in the next bill, but we're going to actually go to a dash five. So.
All right. Tracy, could you come up for a minute? Are we all in agreement now that we can move forward with the dash twos?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, Tracy Rutten with League of Oregon Cities. We did submit a dash three amendment request for this bill as well, just to clarify and make sure that for those cities that are within Clackamas County, that it would be clear that there would be some level for them to participate prior to having that program apply to their within their city limits. Just to ensure that there is that early opt-in process and some conversations that we think are really important from the onset of the program.
Okay. Are the two amendments mutually exclusive? Do we create a problem? Do we have dueling amendments here? Which is what I'm concerned about.
Chair Witt, I think, yes. I think it's important to note that without the allowance of other governmental agencies to participate, and what we're going to ask in the dash fives from 2985, which is not open yet, is that we limit the preemption specifically to Clackamas County, and we take that fight sort of at the local level and not have to have 35 other counties involved. So that's what we're going to ask for in the dash five of 2985. I know that's not open yet for discussion.
Yes.
But this bill is specifically about the funding for the pilot, and to inject that preemption fight into this bill, I think, would be a mistake. So I would say that I'm willing to concede to Clackamas only in the other bill, the truly what is the preemption bill. But to insert that into this one, I think, again, we just get to the point where we can't even get this pilot off the ground. You know, I'm committed to this, whether it's in this state. I mean, Washington State now has said that they're interested in this. If I got to go to Clark County and work on this, I will work on it with Ann Rivers over in Washington State and do it there because it's close enough to home that we can launch it in another county. I really don't want to take this somewhere else. It's in my county. I want to deal with it there. I will deal with my cities in the county of Clackamas locally, which is what the dash fives will do in 2985. But this is a lot of jobs for our state, and this is a huge opportunity to try something different. And there is no other opposition to this bill except something I think is workable in the pilot with the cities when we get moving and get started in that pilot process. We'll also ask for a sunset for 5 years in the dash fives of the 2985 when we have that open that bill.
Committee members, questions, comments, discussion, debate among competing amendments. Vice Chair McLean.
We have tree ordinances. We have the Forest Practice Act, and then we have the possibility of this really, I think, exciting, interesting pilot. It's just that it seems to me that on the dash three, on this particular one, if you look at lines 15 through 20 on that, base, and this is the amendment. This is a dash three amendment.
That's the League of Cities amendment.
It says dash three. That's what it says on the top for me, I guess. So the county.
What's the date?
So, and the date on that is 4/8/15. So it says the county and a city may work jointly to adopt components of the project within the city limits. City adoption of the project must be by ordinance or resolution and may specify how the project is to be administered within the city limits, including but not limited to specifications regarding land use zoning requirements, maintenance requirements, and the issuance of tree removal permits for harvesting of trees enrolled in the program. And so when I looked at that, I felt always that, you know, I'm looking for something that's not competing, but something that brings cooperation. And so in my mind, to go forward with this really good idea for a pilot and harvesting urban lumber, which I think is a really intriguing idea, but we have to have all the players there that are dealing with the Forest Practice Act, the tree ordinances, land use ordinances. We have to have everybody involved. And so for me, this can cooperate. It says that they can adopt components. So it allows everybody who has something that they're responsible for at the table to help make sure that all of these different regulations and rules that we have from the state as well as at the local level are being discussed. And so I don't think it takes the county pilot away from anything that's possible. I don't think it takes the city out of it, but I think it tries to bring cooperation. Chair. So that's where I'm at on the dash threes.
Chair Witt, Representative McClain. So let me clarify for you the challenge here that we have with the dash threes. And while we fully anticipate when we bring you back a turnkey product, that what that looks like is that as part of that package, you would get like the memorandum language that would be like, here's how you join a co-op. That would take a vote right now without the dash threes of a vote of every city who wants to join a co-op. So the counties would not just come in and randomly start planting in city land without their permission. So, so I'll be very clear. That mechanism is already going to be in the pilot and in the turnkey package. Every local jurisdiction would have to take a vote if they want to participate. Where we get snagged on the dash threes is that if you have another governing agency or private person in, or like a Merrill Hurst University is in the city of Lake Oswego, they have acres of land sitting there not usable that they just mow and put pesticides on and do all kinds of things with. So you've got non-governmental organizations, and you also have other governmental organizations. We can even say during the pilot, I'm willing to say, look, we'll just not do the residential piece. But when you've got some large tract landowners that are permanent asset fixtures, like a university or legacy hospital, those buildings aren't going anywhere. They'd like to be partners. They want some surety that if they put trees in for a co-op, those trees can come out. But those fall under the city's jurisdiction. So in the case of a school district, a government organization, if you have Tigard and Tualatin, or in this case, Westland and Wilsonville, let's just call it like it is, City of Westland has said, took a resolution, said we want to be in the co-op. City of Wilsonville clearly is not interested in this. That's fine. We don't want to plant on City of Wilsonville land if they don't want to. But if the Westland-Wilsonville School District chose to take a vote, we are limiting, they're their own government agency, we are limiting their ability to participate with the dash threes, because the City of Wilsonville could come in and say, well, that school district is in the City of Wilsonville, we won't let you plant there, which takes away the opportunity for the school district to actually participate and create revenue for their general fund. So that's the problem with the city's amendment. We're not forcing any city in against their will, but what we do want is the ability for ODOT or the school district or a special district or some other governing agency with their own elected board to be able to make that decision. And for the pilot, we're willing to take residential out. So we can do that. But somebody else who has their own elected body should be able to make a decision about the land that they're that they have fiduciary responsibility to their taxpayers without a city making that decision for them.
Can I clarify one thing, Chair Witt?
Please.
If I may. I've not, in the language as drafted, we have not seen that there is anything that would limit this to only those who have a separate governing body. So that is not a conversation that we've had yet. We realize that as a city, if we were going to plant trees on our own land, that would be something that would be at the discretion of the city. And we realize that, and that would be a discussion at the city level. Our concern is a little bit greater and broader as to the current ordinances that do impact all residents right now of a city. Tree City USA program is something that is very important to a lot of the cities that we represent. And they do have very complex and specific tree ordinances. They don't prohibit the removal of trees necessarily, but there is a process and there is consideration given to many things, including stormwater management, sensitive areas, riparian zones, things of that nature, as well as carbon sequestration issues. So, you know, I think that our concern stems larger than, you know, we realize that we do control our ability of whether we want to plant or do our own program within city and on city land. And very well, many cities might want to do this and make those types of investments very well. We certainly don't want to stand in the way of this program moving forward. We would like to see there be a local process at the city level because we do think that the consideration that needs to be given within city limits is going to be different than that for county land.
Yes, Vice Chair McLean, please.
So let's take Forest Grove, for example. They are Tree City. They have Pacific University there, and they have a lot of old oaks on that. So does the tree ordinance in the city of Forest Grove, does it cover the Pacific University site?
Chairwhite, Representative McLean, I would imagine that it would cover them. Again, not necessarily saying that they are not allowed to remove trees, but that they would need to talk to the city or get a permit for those trees. And typically, if a tree is diseased or damaged or causing problems with infrastructure, typically you'll see that many ordinances do not have a permit fee associated with those, but it's just a means by process to make sure that there aren't really good trees that are providing a lot of benefit that are coming out without a lot of thought or concern about that.
And Chair Witt, Representative McLean, you know, the thing about the Tree City USAs, and all of my cities, I believe, are in that as well. And again, one of them has voted to participate, and the others are interested in, you know, coming on board. And even the city like Oswego, I've talked to the mayor there different times, and then, you know, these concerns came up that were sort of not founded, or they, you know, were misrepresented to cities as far as some of the information I've seen that's gone out to cities that's come back to me. And there is interest in this. The interesting thing about the Tree USA, the Tree City USA, is that this is a new program. So it does not affect the 100-year-old oak trees on the Pacific University. We're talking about the new trees that would have otherwise, but for this program, never been planted. So the old trees would still have to go through that process. We're talking about the new trees going in to fill up the spaces that otherwise would never have been planted at all, which increases carbon and sequestration and a lot of the goals of Tree City USA. We want to get this pilot move forward. We want to work with the organization, the larger organization, because we see other states who are already saying, hey, we want some interest in this as well, and we want to be able to participate. I think that's actually, once we get this pilot moving, is going to change the dynamic of the Tree City USA and how they do business, because this was never in their thought process before.
Rep. Parrish, I agree with you completely. That's part of the reason that I lent my name to this bill. I want this bill to pass, but I also think it is critically important that we make allowances for the cities who undoubtedly have spent considerable time and effort in developing their own urban forestry plans to be able to have the two efforts comport with one another. Every bone in my body that says fair and just has to allow for that. So with that in mind, let me try for some kind of middle ground here. We go with the -3 amendments, possibly, and specify that public entities within the city are free to run their own program. So a school district, if they've decided that they want to harvest trees on school district-owned lands, would be able to move forward. And outside of any of these other sub-public entities would then be governed, would be called to the table to reach agreement as the -3 amendments outlined. Would that be some kind of middle ground that everyone could live with?
And I could live with that.
And we could send this bill on to the greatness that's due.
I could live with that. And I could limit it to just Clackamas County for the first 5 years, too.
Okay. All right. Yes.
Perfect. Really talk to me about Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and they've got a 100-year-old tree in their backyard, and they say, I'd like to take that down, take part in this program. I'm willing to replant a tree, but I could get some value out of it. It's private property. It doesn't belong to the city. Mm-hmm. Why should the city be able to tell them what to do?
Chair, Representative Krieger, I don't think the city should be able to tell them what to do. So philosophically, that's just going to be a difference between me and the city. That 100-year-old tree, however, that's on their property would not be considered a co-op tree. It would be considered part of the regular tree ordinance tree. And in my city, what you have to do is go to the city and get a permit and tie a ribbon around it and let people cry over it for 30 days. And they send out a mail, you know, mailer to, oops, excuse me, to like everybody within an X amount of community around my neighborhood. And there's a process. And then if your neighbors don't pitch a fit, then you get to take the tree down. That's the process in West Lynn. Now imagine if we tried to create a program that says we're going to put some trees in purposefully to harvest, even on school district property. And that's the process for every single tree. That's why this doesn't work. So I personally, Representative Krieger, am right on board with you. If you've got a spot of land and you want to put 10 black walnut trees and register them and maintain them, and to the piece about whether or not they're going to be in line with the forest practice standards and all of those kinds of things that I'm not an expert in, that's what the Dash 2s do by putting that language in that says we're going to be managed under that. And that means the county forester has to abide by that. That means when you enroll your tree, you're committing as a co-op member to abide by that. We are trying to address those things. I am willing to hold back on the private landowner until such a time that we can get this off the ground and create some demand so that that can be a conversation in cities, and this keep it to the governmental folks so we can be have the fiduciary responsibility of using our resources wisely. I'm willing to do that if that means I can do it in my county and not take it over to Washington State and do it there.
Okay, before we lose sight of what I think might have been some middle ground, I'm gonna ask Mr. Gallagher.
Keep that back in English.
to work with Ms. Rutten and Representative Parrish to get that amendment drafted. Vice Chair Krieger, if you have concerns about trees on private property that is over and above whatever Dash amendment we've got going here for middle ground, you would be free to bring that amendment forward. And it's not to say that we can't adopt two separate amendments should there be critical mass around that concept that you brought forward.
And Chair Witt.
I have 4.5 minutes to complete the next bill. We've done over 10 minutes on this one, and I'm telling you, if we don't make it, 2985 drops off the charts here today. Representative Esquivel.
Very briefly, let's not overload this thing to kill the program and the idea. I've seen that happen so many times with government where you get people piling onto it, and pretty soon it goes away. Let's not do that.
And Chair,
thank you very much.
The Dash 2s still need to be worked because that's the forestry language, and that is the – yeah. So in the Dash 2s and the Dash 3s to both bills still needs to happen in spite of this amendment, because that's what brings us into compliance with DOJ and the Department of Forestry.
Thank you for that reminder. I will prefer to work all amendments at the same time so that we mentally have everything before us and understand what we're doing when we're doing it. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2984, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2985. Tracy, if you'd like to stay there, you're welcome to stay there.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, still Julie Parrish from House District 37, asking you to at least move the Dash 3 when we get to moving amendments, because that brings 2985 in line with the Department of Forestry and the Department of Justice. And then we will go back and work on some compromise, final compromise on the preemption level of jurisdiction issue, so that we can get this down to Ways and Means and out on the floor and create jobs for our communities. And we'll do the Clackamas only piece if that is a big issue, but happy to offer that up as bait as well. How's that?
All right. Tracy, are you good with the Dash 3 amendments?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, again, for the record, Tracy Rutten, League of Oregon Cities, and we, the Dash 4 amendments would address our concerns, again, the similar preemption language. So without that, I think that we would be hard-pressed to be able to be supportive at this time, though we, again, would like to see the program move forward if there is a path to move forward.
All right. Representative Parrish, do we have dueling amendments here again?
Chairwick.
For the same reason.
For the same reason as we just discussed in House Bill 2984, we have dueling amendments. And I just, you know, I am willing to come to the table and concede to the point where I can concede. And, sir, I think my final offer is on the table at this point. Clackamas only, sunset for 5 years, take out the residential and cities that have not agreed, and leave in other government agencies that have their own duly elected board of officers to make that decision at their level of government.
I would strongly urge you to run right down the hallway and get that in the hopper. Committee members, Representative Esquivel.
Yes, do you agree with that, with the League of Oregon Cities? Because we don't want to go forward here and then have you come in and kick the stilts out.
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, I've obviously not run any of this by my cities. I certainly see this as a better path forward. So we'll definitely be talking with them in an encouraging fashion to be able to get the program going. Right now, I don't see any issue with that being unreasonable. But again, I will make a commitment to immediately go touch base with those who have been concerned, and touch base with committee staff, the chair, and Representative Parrish by no later than early this afternoon.
All right, very good. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2985 and make the following announcement that I'm going to carry forward. House Bill 3210, House Bill 2668, House Bill 3141, House Bill 3459, House Bill 2537, House Bill 2984, House Bill 2985, and any and all bills on today's agenda not moved out of committee. That's the legal subscript. We're moving those bills, we're carrying them forward, and with that, we stand adjourned. Thank you, committee members. And with that, we stand adjourned. Thank you, committee members. We're carrying them forward.